And welcome to today's Job Seeker broadcast. Our topic today is Secrets of a Headhunter. And yes, you know that mysterious group of gurus you've heard about out there called headhunters and recruiters, and you've heard that they can perform miracles for their clients. And maybe you've wondered exactly what do they do, how do they operate, and more important, how you can find one. You. Well, maybe you should look again. The information you learn from today's broadcast may surprise you. To help me discuss this topic today, I'm joined by a seasoned expert in headhunting who is a reformed headhunter turned career coach, none other than Linda Baugh out of Scottsdale, Arizona. Linda is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website, and you can see Linda's picture and bio. Just click Preferred Counselors on our toolbar. And hello there, Linda, from Scottsdale. Well, Linda may be having some technical difficulties. I'll just keep talking away. I've got a lot to say about Linda. Linda's been helping men and women advance in their careers since 1985, and she is president and founder of ACE Executive Careers.
John, can you hear me now?
I can hear you now, Linda. Welcome to our broadcast.
Thank you. I'm really glad to be here.
I'm just
Go ahead. We're just talking about headhunters, huh?
We're talking about all the secrets that you know about headhunters and that you're now a reformed headhunter turned expert career coach. And I'm telling the listeners that you began way back, what has it been? Was it 10, 15 years as a headhunter?
Actually, I was 5 years vice president of an executive search firm in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Oh, my.
It was a good tenure. Yes.
Yeah. Linda, as a career coach, has learned how to help people get hired. And I need to say this is very close to my heart because, Linda, in addition to you, I started my career as a headhunter, and I work for two different companies. So we share that in common. And really, as we coach individuals in the job search, I would say from our headhunting years, we did learn a lot about what goes on behind the scenes and how we can translate all that know-how into coaching people. But that's going in a different direction. I just want to say to our audience that you have published numerous articles, are a sought-after speaker, and you have a very solid and successful practice, which you have started, ACE Executive Careers in Scottsdale. And Linda, as we turn to this topic, we need to say that from a standpoint of defining exactly what is a headhunter, and this perhaps shows my bias, headhunters are really responsible for a maximum of 3% of placements, of people actually getting hired, maybe 3% of the population out there that get new jobs, get hired, get them through headhunters. So we're talking an incredibly small slice. 97% of people are getting hired through other ways, and yet there's this mystique. I mean, everywhere you turn around, somebody's saying, well, I heard this from a headhunter, or a headhunter wrote this book, or there's a talk given by a headhunter on how to write a resume and how to interview with an employer. And yet only 3% of people that are getting hired do so with headhunters. So hopefully today's broadcast is going to clean up some of that stargazing that all of us tend to do. So, Linda, can you give us a definition? Exactly what does a headhunter do? How do they work?
I'm glad that you asked that, John. It's pretty straightforward. The headhunter is going to be performing a service for a company who is asking that headhunter to find a very particular type of an employee. And they usually approach the headhunter when they've had a hard time filling the position. In fact, we used a little shorthand term, a skill shortage position. In other words, this is a hard-to-fill position. So the pecking order, if you will, is first of all, the headhunter is working for themselves. They're either the business owner or they're in a small business or even a national recruiting firm, and they're working for themselves or for the firm. Secondly, they're working on behalf of a company who is asking them to find that needle in the haystack type of an employee. And then thirdly, go ahead.
Well, I think that's a very important clarification that people don't get, and that is headhunters are not working for you, the job hunter. They're working for the employer because the employer is paying their fee.
Exactly. And that's the simplest way, that's the most logical way for people to understand it. You know, I've heard a lot of people, and this is a myth, and you were sharing some of the myths that are out there about headhunters. One of the myths is that a headhunter is going to find me a job. Well, are you paying that person? No. So they're not working for you. And the trouble is that some of the people who are in job search, they have friends and family come, why don't you just get a few headhunters working for you? But, you know, that's, again, it's so logical. We're not paying them.
Huge misnomer, huge misunderstanding. Right. So, in reality, a company cannot find a very, very difficult cannot find a qualified applicant for a very difficult position to fill. And so they contract with a headhunter, and I'm astounded. I mean, headhunters are getting paid 30% of what a person brings in as far as their annual salary. If somebody's making $100,000 fair, that's $30,000 for placement. And yet, if we think about it, at least my experience, Linda, I don't know about yours, a successful headhunter will make one, maybe at the max, two placements a month. And so at the end of the at the end of the year, we're talking 12 to 24 placements total.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they're getting resumes. I mean, what would you say, Linda? They're getting 5+ resumes a day. That's 25 a week. That's 100 a month. Would that be fair?
That would be on the low end, I think, John.
that would be
on the low end.
So-and-so's a headhunter. Oh, I'll just send my resume, and maybe that person can help me find a job. Well, no. That person is hired, contracted, to go find a needle in a haystack. They are trying to go out there and locate. And as I recall, back in my day, it was up to the headhunter to find three qualified applicants to then refer to the employer. The employer interviewed all three and picked the one that they liked the best. And really, the headhunter didn't care which one. I found three for you. Here they are, Mr. Employer, and hope you hire one. Well, if you don't, I'll go find some more. And so the headhunter, bottom line, is not that interested in you, the job applicant. He just wants to get paid, right?
That's true, not to be too hard on the headhunters, and we both did it, but it's a commission sales job. And to expect a person who has the personality of a commission salesperson to be a counselor or a career coach or an advisor, it's just apples and oranges. So, yes, you're right.
Yeah, I'm just a horse in another color. Now, you have some things that you have encountered in your experience, Linda. Are there some ways that a person could be misunderstood and as a headhunter. In other words, someone might appear to be a headhunter, but they're really not, or the public might assume that they are. What does that look
like? Well, that is really, really true. There are companies, and we call them career marketing firms. I mean, that's the name in the industry, but they may try to represent themselves to job seekers as recruiting firms. But the quickest way to know that it is not a recruiter is as soon as that person says to you, well, you know, I can help you out with your job search and we can do your resume and it's only going to cost you X dollars. And from the ones that I've seen, they can run $3,000, $7,000, $10,000, $12,000 or more dollars with these, you know, job search programs that they're offering. And it's usually not much more than a direct mail campaign.
Yes.
What have you seen?
Yeah. Well, I know that you and I do job search coaching, and we do charge
mm-hmm.
a fee. I think the difference is that there are some folks out there that appear or like to give the impression that they're a headhunter.
Right.
And I know you and I both have experienced this situation where there might be a vacancy ad posted. Somebody applies for the ad, and they get a response, oh, I'm sorry, that position has been filled, but you have a nice resume. Maybe I can help you. And
yes.
It turns out, what do you call that?
Bait and switch.
Bait and switch.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're absolutely right. And a lot of people who are actively in job search and they're posting their resume out there, and basically what they become are kind of targets for these firms that will, you know, make some pretty big promises. But as soon as they represent themselves as a headhunter and then they turn out not to be, or as a recruiter, that should really be a red flag.
As we're talking in terms of caution here, it reminds me, I've had situations where clients will engage with a headhunter, and the headhunter will say, well, where have you been interviewing? And the client will say, well, I was at such and such a company. Oh, what position was that? Da, 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 da. And a program director, a vice president. Oh, well, who were you talking to over there? Because I've done business with them. Oh, Ralph Smith, thank you. And then what they do is they hang up and call Ralph Smith. Understand you have a vacancy for a vice president. That does go on, right?
Right, and then they would submit your competition.
Right. It's sad, but unfortunately those things happen. Now, Linda, can you tell us how does a hunt header work? What is their day like? Exactly are they doing?
Oh my gosh, I'm glad you asked that. Well, if they have a company that they're working with on a particular position, they're, of course, going to spend that day trying to find candidates that are really a good fit. And the pecking order that I would go through would be, first of all, I'd look at my data.
We need to go to a break, Linda. We'll be right back.
Sure.
Okay, John, we have a short 2-minute break. Today we've been talking about job search tips, but you do a lot more for men and women who are struggling with mid-career issues.
That's right, Evan. Since the mid-70s, I've been counseling men and women who have hit a dead end in their career and feel like they don't have any possibility of finding a fulfilling job.
So you're saying that there is hope for some of us who are stressed out or don't like our work?
That's right, Evan. I think we're all aware that over 50% of employed adults state that they do not enjoy their work and that they would look for another career if they just knew how.
Well, I know you can't give us a silver bullet to know how to do it, but can you toss us some nuggets to ease the pain?
Certainly, Evan. What we have found in over 30 years and 30,000 adult clients is that a good job fit requires two important basic ingredients.
Okay, you have my attention. What are those two basics?
The two basics for a good job fit are, first, having a passion for what you do, something you really like, something which gives your life meaning and purpose. Okay, I guess I figured that one out, but what is the second basic?
The second basic for a good job fit is something you are naturally good at doing, something that fits your wiring, something that brings out the best in you.
So you're saying that you must like the job and also be naturally good at doing it, right?
That's the starting point, Avid.
Okay, well, we need to get back to our broadcast. We'll talk more about finding a job you can really be good at doing at our next break. If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's pick up where we left off.
And today we have a lively discussion concerning the secrets of a headhunter. And right here on our broadcast, we have a veteran headhunter who's now reformed and is a career coach, Linda Baugh from Scottsdale, Arizona. Linda has her own professional career guidance company called Ace Executive Careers. She coaches people in job hunting. She coaches people in finding their dream career. Linda, it's a delight to have you on our broadcast. And we were right in the middle of learning what are the day-to-day what does a headhunter do? How do they go about earning their pay? And we got cut off at the break, so pick it up where we left off.
Absolutely, John. What I've been discovering is that one of the best resources for recruiters and headhunters to find candidates today is LinkedIn. Almost all recruiters are using various methods to search LinkedIn to find whether it's a vice president of marketing or a project engineer or a project manager or quality manager. They're really looking on LinkedIn. The second resource would be referrals. It's not surprising for a recruiter to be calling their former companies or former candidates or calling thought leaders in a particular industry and candidly saying, I'd really like your advice. I'm working on a search assignment. I'm trying to find a person that has this type of background. I know you've been very active in this industry. Who would you recommend I speak to?
That sounds like pirating. Is that a fair statement?
No, it could. You know, they may be trying to lure, let's just say, talent from competitive companies. Yes, that is part of the process.
So I'm calling Sally Smith and saying I'm looking for a vice president. I represent a company. I'm looking for a vice president of finance. And Sally is a vice president of finance. And do you happen to know anyone? And Sally then says, well, I might be interested. Well, that was the purpose
exactly of
the call in the first place.
And yes, that happens a lot. Or they do give a referral of someone that they would recommend. So I'm sure that a lot of our listeners have the idea that recruiters are out there posting positions all over the internet. Not so. You do see a lot, but many of them are doing exactly what we're talking about. They're going to sites, particularly LinkedIn, and they are doing what we do in job search, calling people up, getting referrals.
And to the best of my knowledge, Linda, your practice may be different, but you have headhunters that are experts in medical sales. You have experts experts in engineering and very, very high in specialized areas. So they are very, very knowledgeable in a very niche area. And they can talk shop. They know
exactly
the latest lingo and so on.
Well, they should, absolutely. And, John, what do you think if we kind of give our listeners some tips on how they could find a headhunter.
Absolutely.
Or work with them.
Go for it.
You and I spoke about this the other day, that there is something called the Kennedy Directory of Executive Recruiters, and that really is like the Bible of executive recruiters. And it's available online, but there is a fee to use it. It's also at the library. And there are some directories of recruiters online that are free. One of them has a very unusual name. It's called OYA Directory of Recruiters, O-Y-A apostrophe S. But whatever type recruiter you might be trying to find, whether it's a nonprofit type of a job or consumer packaged goods or transportation, supply chain, they're all categorized exactly as you were speaking about, John. And a person could look through that directory, look up those recruiting firms, and determine two things. One, do they hire the types of, are they working with the types of positions I'm interested in? And do they handle the geographic location? See, that's another thing that's very important. Do they,
right.
You know, if it's Portland where you're located right now, do they handle the Portland area or not?
Yes. And I think, Linda, we're trying to send a very clear message that to try and woo or badger or cajole a headhunter to look your way and to help you is probably a waste of time. They are focused. They are on a search for a needle in a haystack. Just maybe what they're looking for. We're only talking 3% of positions mm-hmm. filled are filled by the services of a headhunter, but just maybe. Now, I would say this. If there's a listener that has a PhD in an extremely unique area, then I would coach that person to look up the headhunter that specializes. Absolutely, yes, because sometime down the road, there may be a need. And what I'm saying is if there are about 100 of you in your specialty field, then headhunter is a way to go. Because there are only 100 of you, and maybe at one point in time, 25% of you are looking for employment. So those 100 out of the millions and millions of workers in the United States, that's a needle in a haystack. And then there are the rest of us that have pretty much standard everyday jobs. Headhunter is probably not the way to go. Would that be fair?
Well, I encourage my clients to contact maybe 3 headhunters, but not to expect anything. Find 3 that fit exactly your niche, and you can, communicate with them. But then if you don't hear back from the headhunter, it's just because they're not working on your type of position right now. It is not a rejection. It doesn't mean you don't have a good background. They're just not working on that particular niche position right at this time. But I don't see any downside for the candidate as long as they put in their message to the recruiter, you must contact me prior to submitting my resume to a company. Because what if the candidate has already applied to that company? That could be a negative.
That could be a negative. Now, while we're on the subject of what to do, what not to do, help us understand, Linda, the different terms by which a headhunter works. What are the contractual arrangements? There are two standard types of contracts, you might say, wherein a company engages with a headhunter. Help us understand that.
Sure, John. I'd be pleased to. Most recruiters are working on what's called contingency, meaning they don't get paid a dime by the company unless and until the company hires a candidate that they have presented to them. So that when I mentioned before that the recruiter is a commissioned salesperson, another example of that, candidly, is an automobile salesperson. Usually they don't have any sort of a base salary, and they only get a paycheck if they sell a car. So some recruiters are working strictly on what's called a contingency basis. And as you mentioned earlier, John, you know, if they're doing well, they're making 1 to 2 placements a month, you know, enough to earn an income and, you know, to pay their mortgage and you know, have a decent lifestyle. Then there are the retained recruiters. And this is usually, not always, but usually for the higher level positions, the true executive search firms. This could be a director, vice president, a C-level position, the president of an organization. And this is where a company would say to the recruiter, we want you to work on this exclusively. And to be sure we have your full attention, we're going to pay you like a third of what the fee would be up front. So they are retained. And it's very much like, John, if you or I to work with a lawyer, an attorney or an accountant, they usually ask us for what? A retainer up front.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So they've been engaged that way. And typically the retained recruiters are doing a lot more in-depth assessment and vetting of the candidates. And what I'm just going to keep talking if you don't mind, but what I've seen recruiters do at the executive level, the retained level, they will bring the candidates in for an interview, or the recruiter will fly to where the candidate is to interview them. They will check their references. They will verify all of their employment and their education. They may even give them an assessment, like some of the assessment tools that are used at IDAC. And by the time they're presenting that candidate to the company, I mean, they've been checked out, you know, five
right.
ways from Sunday.
Well, they're getting paid to do that, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's
now,
right.
Is it true, Linda, in your experience, it has been in mine, that the, you know, the elite are the retained,
right.
and the ones that are out there just grabbing and trying to make make a living at it, they're just in a sense getting started. They're the ones that are on a a maybe basis. There is no firm contract, but the company is willing to receive their referrals. The contingency option, there could be 5 headhunters working on one vacancy, and they're all
yes,
sending in
true.
Their candidates.
Right.
Is that fair?
That could be true. Mm-hmm. That's right.
And these headhunters don't know that there are other headhunters competing for that, whereas in a retained situation, there's only one headhunter, and that headhunter has been paid up front a third
right.
to spend
right.
the time and money to go get this very, very unique, one-of-a-kind person for that position. I mean, if Intel, Coca-Cola, AT&T were looking for a new president, we would assume they would contract with a headhunter. Would that be fair to say?
Right, with a true executive search firm, it would probably be on a retained basis, just like we've been discussing. That's right. But
that's right.
For the more bread and butter positions, oh, go ahead.
We need to take a break, Linda.
We're taking a short 2-minute break to ask John Bradley some more questions about moving ahead when you're stuck in a lousy job going nowhere. John, in our last break, you gave us 2 basics which any fulfilling job must have.
That's right, Evan. Every fulfilling job must be something you like, something which gives you meaning and purpose. A second basic is having job duties which bring out the best in your natural strengths.
Okay, John, I've been thinking about that natural strengths part. What is the difference between a skill a person has learned from previous work experience and a natural strength or talent?
Well, Evan, each of us has a set of innate strengths which are part of our DNA. When we do career aptitude testing, we look for those and then match them to the things a person likes to do.
So what are some examples of these natural strengths?
Well, we have researched this extensively and have a database of over 90,000 career matches. In that range of careers, we find 54 distinct natural talents, which represent all of those 90,000 options.
90,000 career matches. Is that a big or small number? I was thinking of something like a million or so.
Well, actually, Evan, 90,000 is a very big number. Most all career tests commonly used by colleges only have 2,000 to 3,000 career options in the database. So 90,000 is huge in comparison. I think you were probably recalling employment statistics regarding millions of jobs rather than career options.
Okay, I see. So how does a person plow their way through 90,000 career options to find a fit? Maybe we can take up your answer at the next break.
Yes, sure.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's return to our show.
And we're back to our broadcast. A expert in headhunting. Our topic is Secrets of a Headhunter. And Linda Baugh from Scottsdale, Arizona, is giving all of the insights that she has learned in her field and years of experience. Linda, thank you for being on our show. And we just got interrupted by the break, and you were talking more in length about how a person does benefit and engage and learn from what a executive headhunter is about. And fill me in. I may have lost the train of thought here in a minute, but
that's okay.
Jump in.
You and I were talking so much about the executive level, and the contingency recruiters handle a lot of what I'm going to call the bread and butter positions. They could be technical positions, mid-management types of positions. So they may be handling that, but our caution to the candidate is to be sure when they are contacted by or they contact a recruiter to put in writing that the recruiter may not submit their resume to a company without their prior permission, because you just pointed out before the break, John, that there could be five different search firms working on one position, a contingency search firm working on one position at a company like you said, you know, Coca-Cola or Pepsi or Intel. And the last thing a candidate needs is to have their resume presented by two or more search firms to the same company, because the company's going to say, oh, throw that candidate out, because we're not going to get into a legal dispute with the search firms over who wants to get paid.
Right.
That's just a way to take care of oneself.
Yeah, and also, if, in fact, the candidate has submitted a resume prior to the headhunter mm-hmm. submitting a resume, well,
right.
then there is a, quote, legal issue there, and
right.
you just don't want to get in that that kind of a problematic tussle. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it may be that may be the headhunter's placement of the month, and so they're going to be zealous about, hey, wait a minute, that one, that person that you hired.
Well,
now, Linda,
right.
We've done an excellent job. Thank you so much for peeling the skin off this and helping us go down deep into to understanding the mystique of a headhunter. Do you have any closing comments? We do need to get to the job seeker questions that have come in.
Mm-hmm.
So just sort of a summary of things that we didn't cover, and then let's go to the questions.
Well, there is just one thing that I wanted to mention, and that is we're seeing more and more that some recruiting firms are handling temporary assignments. And I'm not just talking about, the front desk receptionist for a week. Professional level positions, even CFOs, are being placed on 3-month, 6-month, 9-month, 12-month, 18-month assignments. So I just want to give our listeners a heads up that those kinds of opportunities may be presented to them, and not to be too surprised.
And
when
these
it does.
today, much different than 30 years ago, today we have noticed, you and I talked about this, where temp to hire is a much more popular way that organizations would go. In other words, the person is hired as a temp, and then the organization offers that person a job. And there may be some contractual issues when that kind of arrangement is made that may obligate the company or the candidate to reimburse the consultant. Is that fair to say?
What I'm seeing out there is that if a recruiter, headhunter, places a candidate with a company on an assignment, that the company is, let's just say that the assignment pays X dollars per hour, then the recruiting firm is going to be charging the company X dollars per hour plus a really nice override. That's how they're making their money on that.
Yes. And if the company hires the individual full-time, let's say in 2 weeks, they may have to pay an additional sum to hire that person because the headhunting recruitment firm hasn't earned the full fee that really they were expecting. Maybe they were expecting a 3-month or a 6-month, and here they've hired the individual and they're saying, wait a minute, we want now a surcharge on the fact that we're not getting our per hour additional supplement on the person's pay.
There could be, in essence, a placement fee if they hire the person.
Yeah.
Yes, that's
exactly.
True.
Yeah. And one last thing, going way back, and you and I were chuckling about this, as I recall, there was a day where there were what were called employment agencies, and people would go to these places and say, can you help me get a job? You signed a statement that the agency counselor would go out and, quote, market you, call people, call employers up and get you placed. I used to do that way back. There were national companies doing this. There aren't really any doing that anymore. I don't know of any. Do you?
I don't, and of course the bottom line is the candidate had to pay the fee.
That's correct, right. You signed
a
statement.
I don't see it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if the employer doesn't pay the fee, then you are willing to pay the fee, and that could be anywhere 25 all the way up to 35% of your annual income. Okay, well, Linda, thank you on that. Let's jump ahead to some job seeker questions. You got some questions there that we can...
Some good ones for you, John. And this is from a gentleman named John in Florida who says, I want to get a job in some type of international community service. Maybe enter the ministry. What should I do to qualify for these types of positions?
Well, I'll take a stab at this one, Linda, and then that gives you time to think and come up with something better. Anytime a person's thinking of international, I run across this a lot. There is an additional issue here, and that's the cross-cultural issue. And if somebody's talking community service, they're probably talking nonprofit or government. And if they're thinking of ministry service, then we're dealing with a higher relational component in whatever the job would be. It could be teaching English as a second language. It could be working with a school. It could be in some public works project. But normally, if we're using the title of community service or ministry service, there's relationships. And there is a need to evaluate how cross-cultural you are in terms of blending in. Now, here's a real nice litmus test. It's not painful. We won't prick your finger and draw blood. One of the guarantees that you are cross-cultural, John in Florida, is that you enjoy or have enjoyed acting or theater or drama. Now think about it. If you're good in acting, theater, drama, that means that you can interpret a character and portray it in such a way to make an audience believe that that's the real you, whether it's a cowboy or an astronaut or a salesperson, whatever it is, you have that intuitive knack to do that. Well, guess what you're doing when you go overseas? You're interpreting that culture, and you are beginning to absorb and internalize it, and within a few weeks, you begin to reflect that as if you were native born. Well, that is a huge factor if you're going to be involved in some relational job overseas. So I would say that would be the very first test of whether international is for you. There are some excellent resources, websites that can give you names of organizations, government agencies, nonprofits that are working overseas. And my favorite is referenceusa.com. You want to go to the index and you want to find both the government agencies and the nonprofits and even ministerial organizations that are doing that. If you're looking just ministerial alone, ministrywebdirectory.com is another resource that's going to give you a lot of good overseas type of organizations for employment. Linda, take a shot at this.
Wow, John, I was just so impressed with what you said. I never would have thought of you know, the acting type of, but I can see exactly where that, so that you can just quickly pick up on the character, the culture, and modify your behavior to make sure that you're fitting in with the folks. That's just amazing.
Yeah.
Probably a question that I would ask folks if they were thinking about doing any sort of international is to ask, during your life, have you picked up any other languages? Because that would be an indication, in my opinion, that they were interested in international. Have they, even from high school on, joined any international clubs? For instance, well, just here in the greater Phoenix area, there's a group called the Arizona International Growth Group, and it is a meeting of all people who are interested in international cross-cultural business and communication. So there may be some organizations in a community where a person could, if they're already active in those, I think that's a good indicator. And if they're not, they could get involved and, you know, and see, really, does this feel right before I, you know, pack up and move?
Yeah, and I would say, in addition to the very nature of the job, I would, there are so many, many, many challenges in transporting yourself overseas. I mean, just from the medical side, if you weren't born and raised in that country, your body is now going to be like a sponge picking up every potential disease known to man that and known to women in that particular part of the world. So there has to be something that every morning you wake up is catapulting you, and we'll take that up after the break.
Perfect.
Hello, this is Evan Newman, back for a final 2-minute broadcast break. John, in our previous break, you were talking about a database in your career match system of 90,000 career options. I ask, how does a person discover their best career or two from 90,000 possibilities?
Well, Evan, let's begin our advice by playing to our natural strengths, our hard wiring.
Well, what is so important about your emphasis on the hardwired part? Are there soft wired traits?
Yes, we have both hard and soft wired traits. We have those innate traits which make us who we are. These are our hardwired traits. We also have skills we have learned on the job or in a college degree program. These are the softwired traits. When you choose a career, you want to put your hardwired, your innate traits in first place.
Okay, so start with the hardwired traits. But you mentioned degree programs. I'm thinking of engineering, teaching, nursing, dental hygienist. Are those examples of learning software traits?
Yes, Evan. Each of those occupations represent advanced academic training, which prepares a person with skills to use on the job.
So what is the problem? Why are you separating these classroom skills from one's innate skills in choosing one's ideal career? Are you saying that a person cannot learn innate skills in the classroom?
Exactly, Evan. By definition, our hard wiring is part of our genetic code. On the other hand, a person can learn precision detail dental skills or problem-solving engineering skills or even classroom teaching skills. But every high school student will tell you there are some good teachers and there are some okay teachers and, well, there are some who should look to do something else.
So you mean to say that there are some naturally gifted teachers, dentists, engineers, nurses, and so on?
That's right.
Wait a minute. Why would someone choose a career and then pursue a degree to do something which he or she was not hardwired gifted to do? It doesn't make sense.
Well, sadly, it happens every fall term when campuses start up. Schools do not test for innate talent. That is the hardwiring. They test for academic ability to learn a subject matter.
Wow, that seems like a lot of money spent and a lot of debt for the wrong profession.
Well, that's one way to look at it, Evan. We find that the average person under 30 years of age has enough reserve energy to make do if they lack the innate hardwired skills needed for a job. So as long as a person is 30 or younger and has a lot of self-discipline, they can do reasonably well in most any profession where they have received academic training.
Okay, what's the rub?
Well, the rub is that when the person is on the job, they are not able to move beyond the classroom skills they have learned unless they return to the classroom. They don't intuitively, in their core, understand what they're doing.
Wow.
Yep. They are limited in their ability to adapt and grow beyond the classroom instruction given.
You mean that a person who is not wired for the job is like a computer program which cannot intuitively grow beyond the original designs?
Yes. Not to intuitively grow on the job causes internal stress and certainly does not lead to fulfillment.
Well, John, this has been a most interesting journey.
Thanks, Evan.
I want to encourage any of you who are feeling the stress of a dead-end job to go to our website, www.idacgroup.com, and make contact with one of our preferred counselors. Each of these seasoned men and women are professionals at helping you discover your wiring. You will see the reference Preferred Counselors at the top of our toolbar. John, we still have the last quarter of our show. Let's return.
You bet. Let's do it.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley, who has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. And now, John, let's return to our show.
And here we are today at the last quarter of our show talking about your job seeker questions. And my special guest is Linda Baugh from Scottsdale, Arizona. And Linda is the founder and president of ACE Executive Careers. And Linda, we were right in the middle of a question regarding an individual who was considering pursuing a job in the international community service field and perhaps even enter the ministry. And any further thoughts on that before we turn to another question?
Well, I think you and I both always encourage people to do informational interviewing. In other words, go talk to people who have done that kind of work and ask the hard questions. You know, what's it really like? A typical day, a typical week. What kind of shots do I have to get before I go overseas? You know, so that would be a great idea.
Yeah, and it wouldn't
hurt.
But
we do have.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
We do have some other job seeker questions. I wondered if we'd want to take on a
Let's
couple
go
more.
Go to those. Yeah.
Okay. This is David in Clackamas, Oregon. I've been in sales for all of my work life. I tried to start my own business, but it did not succeed. I'm in a high-pressure sales position and need to get out. I like consultative selling. At 63 years of age, what are my best options?
Oh, well, I think you and I have had a few of those types of clients. Let me take a shot at it, and then each of us will have a chance to give it our best. My thought here, if somebody has been doing a profession for the whole of their adult work life, I don't see, unless they're complaining, I don't like selling. Our assumption is if you've been doing this all your work life, you've got to have some degree of savvy and know-how. It sounds like David is in a current situation with a current company where he does not like the sales.
The high-pressure sales.
Yeah, the sort of the ambiance, the culture there. And so the simple thing is get out of that high-pressure sales position and get in with another company. Now, I would say this. At 63, David does not have the prerogative, as he did when he was younger, to do what normally happens in sales is put in your 2 to 3 years and jump, because we know that the highest turnover in employment is in sales, and sometimes these things last 2 to 3 years. So at this time, David really needs to think long term and say where and what product am I most comfortable. And so I would say to David, it's time to choose the territory. Is it the Northwest, the Southwest, whatever? Number two, it's time to choose the product and or service that you're selling. And third, you need to come up with a list of all the employers that represent that product and do your homework to choose the one you feel has the edge, has the best product. You want to work for the best. And once you've done that... And once you've done that, you've got to talk to someone who works there, doesn't have to be in sales, and find out what the work culture is like. I don't know about Arizona, but in Oregon, we get publications of the 10 best companies to work for, or the 100... Actually, it's the 100 best companies to work for in the state, and companies are rated by the employees and so on. And at 63, David needs to make a choice proactively. Now, normally what salespeople do is they just answer vacancy ads, and they'll just go, somebody's looking for this, well, I'll go apply. We're not talking about that. We're saying at 63, choose your product, choose your company, go find out what it's like to work in each of those companies, and then make it your business to start a relationship with the sales manager. You'll get hired.
I agree.
And that's the end of the story.
I was chuckling to myself because you were describing exactly what one of my clients is going through right now. He had been in a certain industry in a sales capacity for about 15 years, and he did some assessment with me. We went through the IDAC career match, and what he is pursuing now is in the solar industry. And he did his research, and he identified the top companies by reputation, not just by sales, but by reputation for service and installation. And he approached and talked with the owner of the company. And the owner of the company, this is what he told him. He says, I'm just about to hire a sales manager. As soon as that person is on board, I want you to talk to him.
Wow, that's
that's
about as solid as it gets.
Yeah,
that's
pretty good.
That's excellent. Well, let's tackle another
one. We've got one last question. Bobby in Branson, Missouri. I'm a college student and not sure if I want to continue on. I don't have a career in mind, and I'm getting tired of taking classes and paying for tuition. What should I do to get on track for a good job?
Wow. Well, at least we want to commend Bobby for being honest instead of hanging in there and racking up student loans or getting mom and dad to foot the bill and not and not going anywhere. There's one myth about college, and that is it's going to prepare you for a job. That is not true. You have to know the job you want, and then you have to be selective as to what is it about college that is going to help you get into that job. So I would say for Bobby, and this is one of my favorite things, I've said it on this broadcast many times, Bobby needs to decide who she is, what it is she wants to do, and while she's still a student, she needs to, instead of job hunt, she needs to hunt for a field experience in the company she wants to work for while she's a student. So what she's saying to the company is, I would like a field experience to supplement my classroom instruction. Could we choose a project that I could do for 3 months, roughly 10 to 15 hours a week, so I could learn on the job what I'm learning in the classroom? That will get Bobby hired, and she may quit school. My hunch is that she'll now have some new motivation and enthusiasm, and that would be enough to help her finish up her degree. But it's a misnomer that people need a degree to get a good job. It does help, but just getting a degree is not going to get you the good job. Linda, take
John, I think you just made my mother's eyebrows go up, because I was one of those kids, you know, from the time I was in school, you know, it was drilled into me. You have to go to college. You have to go to college. But recently I was talking with a person who was interested in a particular field, didn't have a degree in it, you know, wasn't taking classes, and approached the company, the owner of the company, and said, I'm interested in seeing if this is really what I want to do long term. I'm willing to come in and work for you pro bono for a short period of time to help out, to just observe. Would you be willing to have me do that? And he was.
And that worked out. And
12 years later.
Of our show.
Thank you.
And so that wraps up our Job Seeker broadcast for this week. Our host has been job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John is president and founder of the IDAC Group. He has been helping mid-career men and women find their sweet spot since 1973. John has authored 4 career advancement books. He led the development team for the premier IDAC Career Match instrument, which has assisted over 30,000 career seekers nationwide. John has personally trained over 600 counselors, college professors, and consultants in career advancement and job search. And he's personally selected 12 of these 600, whom he highlights on his website. These men and women are independent practitioners whom John has personally trained. They're not employees nor affiliated with the IDAC Group. They have not paid any fee to be featured. They are good, honest professionals who have gained John's approval over many years of successful practice. I'm Evan Newman, and I invite you to join us next week at the same time for our next live broadcast. Do you know someone who is frustrated in their job search? Why not send them a tweet, email, or Facebook note about our free broadcast? Maybe your friend can learn something which will land them that next job. We invite you to participate in our broadcast by sending your job search questions during our live broadcast. These questions received during the live broadcast will receive John's priority attention. Thanks for listening. Best wishes, and may God bless you in your job search.